He goes, no, tomorrow. And he goes, tomorrow, forget tomorrow. Raise your hand. He's starting to get loud. Raise your hand and tell everybody you're coming back. Now, people are starting to look at me now. You know, she's making a scene. You know, looking around, people are looking at me. You know what's going to be next, right? They're going to be thinking at me. So I panic. I raise my hand. And this is right in the middle of somebody's shirt. I've never seen this done before. I've never seen it done after. I just raise my hand. Like somebody's sharing about their opinion. And all of a sudden my hand goes up. And the leader, like, looks and goes, and I say something incredibly profound.
Thank you.
And there's a quiet. Okay, there's a quiet. And then all of a sudden everybody goes, yeah! I thought it was like approval. I now know it's like, thank you for doing that. And I thought I had problems. Raising my hand and telling everybody was coming, there was a wall of self-centered fear that was going to kill me. I couldn't even read a paragraph out of the book. I was so shot. I was so shattered. But being able to raise my hand, tell everybody I was coming back, a big hole in that wall got knocked through. And that was the first time I started to think, you know, maybe if I do this stuff the way people want me to do it, I might survive my alcoholism. And that's really where I started to understand a little bit about the second step. And I knew that the obsession of mine was going to take me back out if I wasn't very, very busy in some kind of spiritual way. I also knew that once I'm drinking, I'll poison myself to death. I've got such a craving for alcohol, I'll drink until my liver shuts down, my heart explodes. That's just the way I drink. And I also knew that my life was unmanageable. Now, my first idea of the unmanageability of alcohol was like this. I thought that the unmanageability was crashing the cars. I thought it was losing the family. I thought it was getting the DUIs. I thought it was being slapped by women. You know, that's what I thought. All that external stuff, that's what I thought was the unmanageability. I now see the unmanageability as more of an internal condition. And our book makes very, very clear the unmanageability. And at one end of the spectrum is being restless, irritable, and discontented. Somewhere in the middle of the spectrum is guilt, remorse, shame, self-centered fear, anxiety, resentment. Anybody in here coming to AA with some resentments? All right, here's the first thing I would do when I would come to in the morning. My head would come up off the pillow, and the first thing I would think about is, those bastards! You know what I mean? And it would just start. That's how it would start my day. Then I'd get them! You know? And, I mean, that's untreated alcoholism. That's the spiritual malady. That's the unmanageability they talk about in step one. At the far end of the spectrum was some of the things I had just experienced at Red Detox. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, terror, frustration, bewilderment, despair. All of that is the spiritual malady. And all of that is usually when you're stark raving sober. You know what I mean? So I see my unmanageability as being a manifestation of my spiritual condition sober, because I'm not living life according to spiritual principles, and because I'm alcoholic. Now the second step started to come alive with me in that group that day. Because I started to think there's a power in this group. There's a power in this group. If I integrate, if I jury up, you know, I may have a chance of being able to stay away from alcohol. I knew I couldn't do it myself. It was a typical day for me. I'd come to in the morning. I'd have to be at work at 8. I'd come to around 7:30, and the clothes I had passed out of the night before, I'd go in, I'd brush my teeth, and I'd do my vomiting calisthenics, you know, smoke and drink, and get in the car, you know, and drive off to work. I'd get to work, and the whole time I would be swearing, I'm never drinking again. I can't be ill like this. you know how ill we are in the morning. I can't do this anymore. I don't want to feel bad like this anymore. Today is the day I'm going to stop drinking. Now, if you would have hooked me up to a lie detector test, the lie detector guy would say, he's telling the truth. He's not drinking anymore. But here's what would happen. Somewhere around noon, I'd rehydrate. You know how you rehydrate? And I'd get half a sandwich down. I'd start to feel a little bit human by about 2 o'clock. You know, quitting time is sport. And I'd start to think to myself, wow, you know that decision you made earlier today about never drinking again? That'd be an overreaction. We may have to modify that a little bit. Okay? Never drink again, you know? We're extreme. And by 4 o'clock, I'm modifying it to buy a bottle at the liquor store on the way home to start the whole thing. And the way I drank was, I drank hard liquor, and I drank it fast, and I drank it heavy, and I was 135 pounds soaking wet, you know? So I got drunk quick. I would go zero to blackout in about 2 hours. You know, I'd pass out, and I'd wake up on the floor, and I'd struggle myself to bed. That was my life. That was my life. So I knew I couldn't survive out there on my own. And I thought, maybe there's a power in this group. Maybe there's a power in this group. So basically, if you know you're hosed, and you know there's a power that can help you, the next logical step is to make a decision to access that power somehow. How do I get some of that power? How do I get what you guys have? You guys are not drinking. I mean, how do you do that? I need that. I'm going to die. And so I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous with a willingness that was born of desperation. I knew I wasn't going to make it. I knew I wasn't going to make it. So I turned my will and my life over to the care of Fish, Food, and Pill. My sponsor. I got a sponsor. And, it was funny. I go up there and go, whoa, I need to get out. Would you be my sponsor? And he goes, I could use a new pigeon. I never heard that term. Pigeon? I'm new. I'm thinking, pigeon? Who wants me to be a stool pigeon? He wants me to tell on all his other sponsees, I guess. Okay, Phil. I had a willingness to even be a stool pigeon. So he started to get me involved with, here's what was being offered around 1989 in Alcoholics Anonymous in my North Jersey area. It's different all around the country. But in my North Jersey area, there was huge emphasis on fellowship. There was some emphasis on service. There was rarely any emphasis on actually working a recovery program and having a spiritual awakening. That's what was available at that time. So Phil did what everybody else was doing at that time. He said, Chris, go to a meeting every single night. And then he started getting me involved in service work. Taking me back to the rehab to bring meetings in. Cooking at the AA picnics. I mean, he had me doing all this stuff. I ended up being a secretary over here, a treasurer over there, lead this meeting, do that. And I got very, very busy with the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would go out to the diner, I even pay for people's meals if they didn't have any money. I mean, I was doing everything I thought you needed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. That was everything I was being told to do. People would pat me on the head, hey, Chris, you're really doing great. You're really sounding good, Because one of the first things I learned was how to give good share. I had to be a little bit self-deprecating, so that I look humble, a couple of funny things, and this is how stupid I was, to get everybody to like me, and I was doing that. So I'm doing all this fellowship stuff, and here's the problem. You know that scared kindergartner? He is alive and well in me. I'm going to 13 meetings a week. I'm making coffee till the grinds are coming out of my ears. I'm going out to the diner afterward. Everything's about AA. And you know what? I'm still restless, irritable, discontented, resentful, tons of self-centered fear, totally uncomfortable with myself and my environment. I was uncomfortable getting up in the meeting to walk over and get a cup of coffee. Everybody be there, where the hell is he going? I was just totally self-conscious and self-centered. Just to a fault. And I'm really dying inside. Now, along, and I'm doing a lot of service and I'm doing a lot of meetings. Now, along comes this guy, Radio Shack Mike. Everybody has nicknames back then. And he hands me a set of tapes. Now, he had given me some tapes prior to this, so I was a little bit leery. He'd given me some affirmation tapes. Anybody ever listen to the affirmation tapes? Well, you got to understand, I'm completely out of my mind. And he gives me these affirmation tapes, and it says, go to a mirror and say 50 times until you believe it yourself, you're a wonderful guy. Oh. So I'm in front of the mirror. Chris, you're a wonderful guy. Chris, you're a wonderful guy. No, I'm not! Trying to treat untreated alcoholism with affirmations is like trying to stop a semi with a cobweb. You know what I mean? Alcoholism is much too aggressive, to be handled with kids' books. So when he gives me this set of tapes, they're from these guys from Arkansas. Thinking, Arkansas? Well, Arkansas? Okay, I'll listen to them. I had kind of a long ride to work. Now, prior to these tapes, my sponsor had suggested that I do a four step. Okay? And again, There was really no literature-based sponsorship in my area at the time. When I said, how do you do a four-step? He would go, Chris, you do a four-step with a pencil! Okay, I know now that people would say stupid things like that, or say it because they don't want to let you know they don't know how to do it. But anyway, here's what I did. You go to the step book, don't you? If you're going to do a four step, there's a chapter on it in there. So I'm going through the step book and, seven bendy sins. What if you have 13? I'm like totally confused. And I do this hodgepodge of an inventory. And really what it was a list of the dirty little things that I had done. It was a list of character defects that I had picked up myself. And it was kind of a life story. I had learned how to do a life story in rehab. So it was confessional. The real idea of a first step is to discover the truth about your stock and trade. Discover the truth about what is blocking you off from a real quality of life. The ability to have successful relationships. What I discovered was nothing, because I already knew all this. And I put it all down, and it was this jumbled up thing. And, I went to do my fifth step with my sponsor. Now, because it was confessional, I got a shot in the arm from this experience. It was, I got a little bit of a spiritual shock from this. Because it was really the first time I had talked about a lot of this stuff. And I remember walking with my sponsor in the park. And at the end, this is the thing I remember the most. He looked at me and he said, Chris, I believe that we're alcoholic before we even put the booze in our bodies. That untreated alcoholism is part of our nature. The alcoholism treats it. We're an untreated alcoholic until we start treating it with alcohol, and then we're off to the races. And he goes, you were like, prior to you drinking, you were like a campfire with the coals just kind of glowing. And when you started drinking, it was like throwing gas on that fire. It flamed up and it burnt at you and everybody around you. But listen, lighten up on yourself. You're now involved in a process to try to get some recovery into your life. You're trying to live sober. You're trying to do the right thing. Stop feeling like crap about yourself. Because I don't know about anybody else, but I was deeply thought, inside that I was like a scumbag. I did so many bad things out there that you can't do a whole bunch of bad things and then have a lot of self-esteem. I thought I was a scumbag. A special scumbag. I'm not a run-of-the-mill scumbag. So that experience, opened me up. It opened me up. Okay, it just opened me up. Now, one of the mistakes I made after doing step five was basically this. Having no big book direction, I took it upon me to work on my character defects, because it's step six and seven. Okay, anybody in here ever work on your character defects? It's a lot of fun, isn't it? The problem with character defects is they require a power greater than yourself too to get anywhere. Now, anybody in here ever seen the game Whack-a-Mole? You take the mallet and you try to hit the mole on the head, and then another mole pops up, and you try to hit that, and another mole pops up. Well, that's what it was like me working on my character defects. I'd be working on selfishness, and something else would pop up. And I mean, it was totally dysfunctional. And I never got anywhere. All I did was I beat myself up about it. I really felt bad about it. You know, so if you're new or coming back and you're working on your own character defects, you need to know you're whacking the mold. Okay? And if you whack the mold too much, you can go blind. Now here I am, this is about the time that Radio Shack Mike gave me these recovery tapes, okay? I start listening to these recovery tapes, and they're Joe and Charlie from Arkansas, who, you know, anybody who's got literature-based recovery needs to bow a little bit to them. They're the grandfathers of the Renaissance movement to get everybody back to the basics of recovery. I listen to these tapes now. The first thing I get is a resentment, because this is what the tapes are saying. Chris, you know, if you aren't in the book Alcoholics Anonymous and actually going through and actually doing what the book tells you to do, taking those spiritual exercises from the book and working with a spiritual advisor or a sponsor on that, you do not have an AA program, because that's what an AA program is. The program is in the text Alcoholics Anonymous. So what you're doing is you're fellowshipping. You're like the pope of the fellowship, but you have no program. So when you go back out, because you're alcoholic, don't run around and tell everybody AA didn't work, because AA is a 12-step fellowship. Now, one of the things that happened somewhere around the 1950s, when AA was first designed, when Bill and Bob had architected this whole thing out, the first 15 years or so, AA was a program of 12 steps with a support fellowship. You worked the 12 steps, and then you got together in fellowship to talk about how that was going and to carry the 12-step message to other people. That's what AA was. Somewhere around 1950, with the publication of the 12 and 12 and with the American Medical Association opening the doors to treatment centers, things started to change. And really today, you know what we are, unfortunately, is we're a fellowship with a support program. And it's perfectly well and fine for us to come in, sit in the back, and not be held accountable to actually working the Alcoholics Anonymous recovery program. We don't need to do it. We can sit there in the back going, I got a desire to stop drinking. Get away from me. And that's fine. Well, welcome. You know, come on in. And you know, I'm not saying that's bad. I mean, I think the doors of AA should be swung open as wide as possible so we can capture as many people as possible. But the problem is, in the early days, more than 50% of the people who walked through the door stayed sober for good and for all. And now we know that's somewhere around 6%. So things have changed. Now, I start listening to these Joe and Charlie tapes, and I'm pissed, okay? Because I thought I was like the AA guy, you know? I mean, I'm doing more than anybody. I'm going to all these meetings. You know, I know all these people. I'm sharing everywhere, you know? I'm doing all these commitments. And what happened was, it was an event in my life. You know, I think we all hit places where we're in the battle. It says in the book, if you don't have an adequate spiritual defense, the trials and tribulations that come our way, we can't survive them. They end up taking us out. And what happened was a couple of events like that happened to me. A number of things happened, and it just shattered me. I had about a year and a half. Just shattered me. I remember going over to my sponsors. I couldn't even talk. I was so emotionally tangled. I couldn't even speak to him, you know. I remember him talking to me about prayer and about this. Phil was funny. Sponsors are funny people. You know, I go up to Phil, like, I'm telling you, I'm brand new. Phil, I'm asking you, come get all the money. Real trouble. And he would go, well, Chris, what I'd like you to do is go to a meeting tonight.
Let me say this slower, Bill. I'm in real trouble here, Bill.
Go to a meeting and it'll all work out. God, don't you hate that? What he understood, though, was to jump in and help me try to manage the unmanageable, which was my life, was a waste of his time. He was more interested in pointing me the direction to where I could find an answer, a lasting solution. You know, and so he would always point me back to AA and always point me back to service. But anyway, I got a hold of these tapes, and because I had this emotional bottom, I started listening to them again. And I started listening to the tapes, and, you know, where it said, we put these people, principles, or institutions down in black and white. You know, I actually did that before I moved on, you know. When I first read the Big Book, I read it like it was the Da Vinci Code. Okay, got that, you know. It's a textbook. We have to do the problems. So anyway, I start doing it the way these Joe and Charlie guys are asking me to do it. Now, I remember going to my sponsor with my first step. And it was a four-column resentment inventory. It was a fear inventory. It was a harms to others emphasis on sex. And it was a sex idea. And I show up with this. He's like, where's your story? You know, nobody's seen these types of inventories in my area before, which is really a shame. But anyway, you know, I said something like, let me just read this. And, you know, I read it. I did the returning home, and we returned home for an hour where we could be quiet, thinking about the past five steps, you know, have we tried to make mortar without sand, are all the stones properly in place? And I really got down to considering where I was with the first five steps, and I was able to move on. And then engage God in the removal of the character defects that are blocking me off from any kind of quality of life. And here's what I learned after I stopped whacking the mole. That you can actually, the best spiritual atmosphere to be in for the removal of your character defects, the best spiritual climate that you can place yourself in, because it says in our step book, God will not render us white as snow without our cooperation. So then how shall I cooperate? The best possible atmosphere for the removal of my character defects is actually becoming willing to make amends where those character defects have harmed others, other people and institutions, and going out and making direct amends to those people and those institutions. And I started to do that. I really felt weird doing it. I had a lot of fear about it. You know, what if I look stupid going to this person and telling them I'm wrong? You know, I could never say I was wrong. I would be wrong, and then I would justify my wrongness for 3 weeks trying to tell you how I was actually right. You know, I mean, I couldn't face the fact that, you know, I would look really small if I was wrong. So I had a lot of trepidation. I had a lot of worry that, you know, what if they put me in jail? What if they call the cops? I had all of these negative emotions going on. But I had a little faith. I had a little faith where it says in the book, 9 times out of 10, we'll be greeted with a generous response. I found that to be the case with me. There was one old boss who threw me out of the office. Get the hell out of here! You know, so, oh, big deal. I get thrown out of an office. You know how many bars I was thrown out of? You know? I used to get cut off all the time. They'd look at me walking in and cut me off. Unbelievable. So, you know, getting thrown out of the place. Big deal. So I tried him again about a year later. Threw me out of the office again. Finally trapped him. We both ended up getting our hair cut in the same place, and he's waiting to get his hair cut. He can't throw me out of the haircut place. I ended up sitting down next to him, you know, got the conversation going, and, you know, admitted my faults. And asked him if there was anything I could do to set right these wrongs, you know. And he said, no, just keep doing what you're doing, you're fine. And, you know, that's the way most of the people were anyway. So I actually got through step 9. I completed all the amends that I was consciously aware of to the best of my ability. There were people that couldn't be seen. There were letters that had to be written. There were other people involved that I couldn't involve. There were all of those scenarios. But I did the best I could with what I had at hand and moved on into step 10. I see step 10 today as accessing all the spiritual principles that you learn in Alcoholics Anonymous. All the things in the book, all the directives, all the steps, all the suggestions, and being able to pull those out of the hat where appropriate as I move through the day. Because I'm certainly not a perfect person. I'm going to continue to make mistakes. You know, in word, thought, and deed, every single day I fall short. And being able to use those spiritual principles in my life is a great thing. It enables me not to continue to build up garbage in the back. You know, we carry around so much garbage with us, all the shame and all the anxiety and, you know, all the depression and all the stuff that we have. We fill a knapsack with that stuff. And with recovery, every single action from recovery, we get to throw these things out and we get lighter and more free. How free do you want to be? Really, consider amends if you've never done it. How free do you want to be? Do you want to be able to be anywhere, at any time, in perfect peace and ease? Because that's really what the ninth step offers us. So in the tenth step, you know, I access that all the time, you know, as I move through the day. Got involved with the 11th step. Now, I had never been much of a journer. I mean, I had to, anybody who have contempt to religious organizations, welcome if you did. I certainly did. I got sober around the time Jim and Tammy Faye Baker were selling the 4,000 heavenly condos and they only had two, you know. And Jimmy Swaggart was calling me a sinner on the TV, and then he gets caught in the Texas motel with the hooker, you know. These were God's front four, you know. They're the main people, so. You know, I didn't really want a hell of a lot to do with that. You know, I'm a reprobate, I'm pathetic, and I'm decadent, but I'm not ripping off the elderly, you know, it's kind of like that. So anyway, I had a lot of prejudice about organized religion because I didn't understand it. I didn't realize that 95% of it is very constructive and very supportive. I think as human beings, we all need fellowship. We're a tribal people. We need fellowship. And for the people that don't have the 12-step programs, you know, man, that's answering a direct human need. You know, I understand that there. But anyway, I started to learn how to pray and to meditate. You know, I was never much of a meditator, but I started to learn to be quiet, to go into that silence. And what I found in many years of meditative practice is this deep healing in that silence. There's things that happen to my spirit, there's things that happen to my human condition that can only come from experiencing that deep silence. What the early AAs used to do is they used to look for guidance. They used to look for direct guidance from God. And the practice that they used was going into meditation with a paper and a pencil and listening for intuitive thoughts. You know, they believed that God spoke to us through our intuition, through that sixth sense. See, that part of us that knows right and wrong. You know, and they would write down these guys' thoughts, like, go visit Aunt Fanny, you know, bring her a food basket. You know, and they'd write this stuff down. And then they would check it with other guided people to see if, do you think this is from God? And they would check it with the four absolutes. And they would actually look for direct guidance from God. That's kind of something that's gotten passed up a little bit the AA that you find today. There's not a lot of people that still do that type of meditation. It's kind of sad. Prayer, I think we all know that prayer is important. But there's some suggestions about religious books, spiritual books. You know, go ask some priests, ministers, and rabbis for some books. I am a voracious reader. Anybody that knows me has seen my library and stuff. I read. I've read, you know, tons of stuff on Buddhism, tons of stuff on Christian history. I soak that stuff up because I find comfort from learning how to live a spiritual life and actually getting my own experience with it. There's two ways that you can learn in Alcoholics Anonymous. One is intellectually and one is experientially. Now, I'll tell you the difference between those two things. Let's say you're a young kid and you got a twin brother and you're both really, really interested in mountain climbing. Now, one of the kids goes to the library and gets every book on mountaineering that's ever been. The other one gets involved in Outward Bound and ends up, you know, taking climbing lessons and ends up being the youngest summiter of Mount Everest ever. The other one is now teaching in a college mountaineering. Now, who do you want to go to that will pass on the experience of being on Mount Everest? The guy who's learned it by reading or the guy who's actually had the real experience? Well, there's a lot of intellectual learning that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous today. I've never been in, say, a ninth-step meeting and somebody did this. I haven't done this step formally. But I'm going to take this meeting hostage for 5 minutes and give you my opinion on it. All right? That's somebody who wants to pass off their intellectual learning. Now, somebody raises their hand right after that and says, I just got back from California. I finished my last 5 direct amends. I'd really like to share about that experience. Who do you want to learn about the ninth step with? You want to learn about the ninth step from somebody who's actually had experience. Now, as we move into the 12th step, I'll quote basically the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. You can't have a spiritual awakening as a result of steps that you never took. It's like coming back from a place you've never been. You can't go. So, steps are usually on the wall. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the other alcoholics. What message are we carrying? The message of, I've had a spiritual awakening. I have an awakened spirit now. I no longer suffer from the hopeless state of mind and body known as alcoholism. I've gone through some simple steps. I've recovered. And I'm available for you if you want a similar experience. I would actually recommend it. That's somebody who can carry the message to an alcoholic. Now, there's a lot of 12-step work. This is a big deal here today. We're talking about a lot of service work. There is absolutely incredibly valuable and valid 12-step work that is not actually carrying the message to the alcoholic. That's done one-on-one, showing somebody how to do the steps, where you can carry the message to the alcoholic, or you can carry the alcoholic to the message. Much of service work is about making sure that there's integrity to the message, making sure that we hold on to the unity of this wonderful thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, so the new sufferer can come in and find what we found here, a message of hope, a message of recovery. And there's many ways to do that. Nothing so much ensures one's immunity from alcohol than intensive work with other alcoholics. Intensive work with other alcoholics certainly includes carrying the 12-step message to them, but it also includes everything that's necessary for that to be able to happen. We have a fellowship, we have a service structure, we have a lot of things going on today that we need to hang on to. We need to make sure it doesn't get messed up for our kids. Because it's like a 25% chance that there's one alcoholic in the family, 50% chance that each of your kids is going to be an alcoholic if there's two. And I don't know about you, but I married an alcoholic, and I've got a daughter now in Al-Anon. I want the 12-step process to be here. There was a couple of pamphlets that were handed out earlier. They're on everybody's table. This is the first sentence in AA's Legacy of Service. Our 12-step, carrying the message, is the basic service that the AA Fellowship gives. This is our principal aim and the main reason for our existence. So we need to take carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous very, very seriously. This is from Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix. It's on page 6. 12-step work is the lifeblood of Alcoholics Anonymous, carrying the message to the next suffering alcoholic. Without it, the fellowship would wither and die, yet even at a simple level, this vital contact between one alcoholic and another involves an investment of time and money. Stuff that most of the people in here today have experience with. The spirituality and money. That's kind of a tricky thing. Practicing the principles in all my affairs. I would love to be able to stand up here and say, hey, I'm an Einstein at that. I gotta tell you, it's tough. It's pretty easy to be in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and be an AA saint. And then you get home and, your clothes are being thrown out on the lawn. You go out every single night, you're out with those guys. And some woman named Bunny called to ask about the recovery workshop, Who is she? You get rear-ended, pulling out. I used to tailgate people, going, hey, he's never done. So it's 30, it's 35. I got to get to the meeting and share about serenity. How about when you stand in line in the 9-item only thing at the grocery store, and say, you know, some old person pulls out like 32 items. Ringing them up, and then she's got the coupon. And then she's got the price slasher card. And then she's got to write the check. And then she wants to talk about the youth group at the church for 5 minutes. Go away! Practicing the principles in all of my affairs. It's a challenge. But I'll tell you what, I'm glad it's a challenge. I'm glad there's always going to be work to do. It makes it interesting. And I'm glad that there's progress, not perfection. Because if we were all a bunch of perfect people, we'd be awful damn boring. You ever known anybody that's perfect? Don't you hate them? It's our imperfections that make us lovable, really. So practicing the principles in all of our affairs are very, very important. You know, if you're new in here today, if you're just coming back, and it really feels like, you know, yeah, the alcoholism, that's a problem, but, you know, my case is a little bit different. I've got, like, unique things going on, you know. I've got some other problems besides alcoholism, you know. And, hey, there's bad breaks and misunderstandings that I've been a victim to. You know, and it's my family. And, you know, they just don't understand me. And, you know, the cops are always hassling me. And, you know, I just don't feel like I'm in the right place at the right time. You know, if you're new or coming back and you feel that way at all, I just want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. That really is the requirement for me.
Thank you. That was phenomenal. If that's not a story of fun, what is it? You know? Something so tragic, we can all laugh. Can we? The light's not on.
I don't think the mic was on.
All right, now.
We can hear you.
Okay, so I just wanted to say thank you so much again. And such a tragic story, listening to all that today. You know, but that's not whole story, but that's what I'm saying. You know, and at least my brain was projected a little bit. I could feel like I did a little healing here. And I just wanted to say, have a wonderful rest of your day. And Robert would like to say something?
Yeah.
And we're going to close right now.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks. I've had the pleasure to know Chris a little bit here down at his group and all. And he ain't sad at all. All the people around him and everything that I heard today, I've heard bits and pieces of. And to meet other people and to hear people with many, many years redoing this work and rededicating and everything that he spoke about. It's an honor and a privilege to know you. Thank you for coming here. And please, I don't want to carry any literature home. You know I got enough. Okay. But it's all for the taking. And if you're not going to read it, bring it to your home group, you know. Bring it to somebody else's group and dump it there. Okay. All right. And Chris had mentioned something that, yeah, we don't hear of much. And there's a gentleman on the way back that gave me this somewhere around day 7, I guess. You know, and somehow it stayed in my wallet. The four absolutes of AA: absolute honesty, both with ourselves and with others, in word, deed, and thought. Absolute unselfishness, to be willing wherever possible to help others who need our help. Absolute love, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with thy soul and with all thy mind, and love thy neighbor as thyself. And absolute purity, purity of mind, of body, and of purpose. Everybody, thanks for making it a wonderful day. Let's close the Lord's Prayer.